Welcome to the Artist Interview Series. In this podcast, we feature interviews with the brightest musicians and music educators from around the world. Our goal is to provide meaningful conversations and insights into their creative process, to discover the inspiration behind the music, and to learn from the experiences of these talented musicians. Our host today is William Crawford, a Lilly Theatre Company drum instructor and associate producer. In this episode, we spend some time talking with Grammy-nominated saxophonist and educator Mike Tucker. In the last 15 years, Mike Tucker has earned an impressive resume of performance credits as well as teaching appointments and has proven to be one of the most highly sought-after performers and educators of his generation. Let's jump right in and get to know this week's inspirational artist.
We have a very special guest. He is a Berklee professor. I was actually one of his students. He's a fantastic saxophone player. Please give a warm welcome to the professor, Mr. Mike Tucker.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, William.
All right. So for those who do not know, Mike Tucker is a re-owned Grammy-nominated jazz saxophonist. I recently discovered something very interesting about you. Jazz was not your first love, actually. It was metal. So, yeah, tell us a little about that. How did metal influence you at first?
Yeah, so, like, I mean, basically, like, I mean, my very first musical experiences were actually, like, at church. I had a teacher, amazing choir director. I was in choir starting when I was, like, six. So, I sang and stuff. So, my very first, like, kind of musical experiences were in church. Before that, the very first thing that ever, like, musical kind of thing that I got obsessed with was Michael Jackson Thriller. So when I was four, my mom bought me that album and I literally wore it out. It was like an actual album, like, for our younger listeners, maybe they've never seen one. Actually, albums are, like, now they're back in style. But anyways, it was an actual album, and I played it for, like, a year. It wore out, had skips, and I, like, begged her to get another one. So that was, like, my first musical love, Michael Jackson, that album Thriller. And then, yeah, I sang in church and stuff. And then when I was, like, seven or eight, like, I was friends with, like, an older kid in the neighborhood. Like, I used to help him with his paper route, and he was, like, super into metal, like, you know, I'm trying to remember the name. Is that Pantera? I don't know if Pantera was out then, actually. You know, like Megadeth, like classic metal, like Megadeth, Metallica, that sort of stuff. And yeah, I mean, I was kind of into, like, all of that when I was younger. And then, like, when I was in sixth grade, the very first, like, kind of band outside of school that I was in was a band called Dragon Slayer. We called it Dragon Slayer. And I was actually the singer in the band. Yeah, that was the first band I was involved with. And actually, I may have told you this, maybe you're in my class, I don't know if I told you this, but the guitarist in the band is, like, he's still a friend of mine, but his name's Ken Susie, and, like, in the metal world, he's actually pretty big because he's in a band called Unearth that's, like, really famous, like, in the metal kind of world. So anyways, he was in that band. It was kind of funny. We never made it past my friend's attic, but, you know, it was fun. So that was the first band I ever was in.
That's awesome. Yeah. Not just a saxophonist, but you're a singer too. And probably
not really. Yeah, I mean, I could play, like, a little bit of guitar, but, like, by default, like, because Ken was, like, so much better at guitar, like, I was just like, all right, I guess I'll be the singer, you know. We were 11.
Well, how'd you start with music? Like, how'd you start becoming a saxophone player? You told us a little bit about your when you were a kid about music. So if you want to tell us more about that.
Sure. Yeah. I guess saxophone started for me in the fifth grade. I started playing saxophone, you know, just kind of the normal way, like most kids play saxophone here in the US, hopefully. I mean, band programs are getting cut all the time, which is really sad. But, you know, I was lucky enough to go to a school that had like a public music program. So there was a day where you just come in. There was like a teacher who like demonstrated all the instruments and did, you know, played saxophone, clarinet, trumpet. I liked the sound of the saxophone. So I picked that and I started playing saxophone. And I mean, at first it was, I just kind of immediately liked it. I gravitated towards it, but it wasn't like the first like few years, like fifth, sixth, the beginning of seventh grade, I had never really like listened to a saxophonist. I wasn't like really into it, but I think I was like pretty naturally talented. Like I don't remember this, but my mom like tells me that like after I was playing for like a couple months, the band director came out to her car. He's like, your son like made it through the book that like usually takes 2 years to get through in like 2 months, you know? So I definitely was like, was pretty talented and stuff. So it came really easy to me. And then like, I guess the first time I played in public, saxophone was in fifth grade for my fifth grade graduation and got all sorts of like positive attention from, you know, my friends at school and the teachers. And, you know, it was like, you know, just, it was a big moment. Everything kind of changed for me then. And then that really like kind of lit a little bit of a spark underneath me, getting that type of like positive feedback from everybody, you know? So
awesome.
So yeah, that was the beginning, man. And then like, and then from there, like we all kind of got into it and we started like our own band, in seventh grade. And then we kind of kept playing with some, like not everybody ended up staying in the band throughout, but, from seventh grade until like, I don't know, almost 11th grade, there was a bass player that I was really close with, who played upright bass. And his name is Mike Hartery. He actually became a very famous luthier. He was the bass player that I like kind of grew up playing with. And we played all the time. We rehearsed. We had gigs even when we were like 13 and stuff. Like we figured out ways to like have gigs. And, you know, we got into like we loved the album Kinda Blue. And we did a concert. My friend went to a private school in ninth grade. And we did a concert at his school where we did like the whole album Kinda Blue from like the beginning to the end. We did like all the arrangements and you know, kind of, we had some charts, but like learned it by ear and just did our best. I mean, God, if I could hear a recording, it probably wasn't that good. But anyways, like, yeah. So like I was pretty like, I kind of got the music bug like pretty early in the game, you know? Like I was like 12 years old, 13, when I really like kind of got excited about music. I didn't fully decide I was going to do music as a career until I was about 15. I went to a camp, went to a summer music camp, and I heard, like, I was, you know, just at that point, like I was always like the best kid at the school and like in the area. But then I went to this camp where like there are kids from all around the country, and I heard like the top band there. And I didn't even make I think I was in the bottom band, or I didn't even make a jazz band the first year, you know? And I heard the top band there and I was just like blown away. And I was so inspired, like, which is funny, you know, you could go either way in those sort of situations. You know, you could either be like, all right, I want to quit because everybody's too good, or you can like, or you can kind of, you know, be inspired by that. So I heard these young musicians like my age or just a little bit older playing at like a way higher level than me. And it just inspired me. So that was like the year, my sophomore year in high school. I was kind of a practicer until then. Like I maybe practiced like, you know, when I was a freshman, like an hour a day, a couple hours a day, like sometimes, you know. But then like my sophomore year, I kind of went nuts. Like I like literally stayed at the school until like I'd get out of school at like 2 and I'd stay there till like 8 and I'd practice. So I like started practicing like 6 hours a day when I was like 15. And I it was kind of a crazy period of development, like from the time I was like 15 until I was about 17. Like those 2 years, I think like I grew probably the most I've ever grown, you know, because I was so young and so like, you know, malleable, and I put a ton of time in. So
that's cool. Yeah. How did Arturo Sandoval find you? How did he find you as a saxophonist?
Yeah. So, I mean, that came like way later. Like there was like a lot that happened in between then and when I started playing with Arturo, but, when I started playing with Arturo, let's see, in like 2014, I think. So like 9 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago. Actually, I did my first gig with Arturo the year I started at Berklee. It was kind of crazy because like Berklee was new for me and it was like a lot, you know, just to like, you know, it's like Berklee's a big deal, you know. It was, you know, my first year teaching at a college and stuff. And Arturo, I got a call. It was totally last minute. So, man, I'll say one thing, you know, for like any young musicians that are listening. I remember back in when I was at William Patterson. I went to William Patterson to college there. I went for 1 year, and I remember Rufus Reed and David Dempsey. They were the head of the jazz department, and Rufus was like, hey, like, you know, we had like this freshman convocation and they had gathered us all in a room and they were just giving us like a pep talk and stuff. He's like, listen, you know, you guys need to practice. Like you need to like shed harder than you've ever like shed it in your life, because, you know, maybe not now, maybe not 5 years from now, maybe it might even be 10 years from now. It's like someday, if you play your cards right, you're going to get a call, like a big call, and you're going to have one chance. And what you're doing right now at school is you're like filling like yourself with knowledge and like a big bag of like skills, so that like once you get that call, like you're not going to blow it. So that happened to me, man. I had got lots of calls. There were lots of calls. But like Arturo was the biggest call that I had ever gotten, you know? And it was, I had a gig the night before. I was in New York the night before. I drove home. I got home at like 5 a.m. and then I got woken up by a phone call at 10 a.m. and I almost didn't answer my phone. I like looked at it, put it down. Then I was like, oh, I don't know that number. I should probably answer it, because it could be, you know, could be some cool gig or something. So I answered it, and it was Bill Pierce, the head of the saxophone department, the old chair of the woodwind department of Berklee. Walter Smith just took over for him. But Bill's a famous guy. He was in the Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, legendary like person. He wow. called in and he was like, hey, Mike, he's like, you working today? And I was like, no, why? And he's like, do you want to play the Newport Jazz Festival with Arturo Sandoval? And I was like, yeah. He's like, can you be there in 2.5 hours? Newport is 2.5 hours from Boston. I was like, yes. He's like, okay, just get up, put your suit on, wear a black suit, get in your car. His manager's going to call you. So I got in my car. I put my suit on, you know, well, other way around. Put my suit on, got in the car, and his manager called me. And he was like, hey, like, so you're cool? I'm like, yes. I'm on my way. It's like, okay, Arturo's going to call you as soon as he lands, because Arturo was on the plane. What had happened is like he didn't have a sax player at the time. He had like a 2 year period where instead of sax, he used this auxiliary kind of keyboard player. He missed his flight. So he needed someone in Boston to like make the gig. So he was like, in his head, he's like, okay, it's Boston. There's going to be a good tenor player somewhere, you know? So he called Bill first, and Bill couldn't make it. So he called me, or perhaps he called other people too, but I answered the phone. So answer your phone. I'm driving down the highway. Arturo calls me. He's like, hey man. He's like, so you play tenor? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay, man, great. You can make the gig. Okay. He's like, you know, Night in Tunisia. I was like, yes. You know, Cherokee. Yes. Do you know Joy Spring? Yes. These are all like songs that he plays. I knew all those songs because they're all like standards that I had learned over the years. And he's like, okay, cool. He's like, for this show, we need to do like a tribute to Miles Davis, because it was the 50th anniversary of Miles playing at Newport or something, or 60th, I can't remember. He was like, you need to learn, if you can, try to learn Coltrane's part to round about midnight from that recording. And I was like, okay. So I'm driving 90 miles an hour, got my stereo turned up all the way, trying to hear this little like guide tone line that Coltrane's playing on this recording. And I got there, man, and you know, it went well. I was able to learn that. That was fine. And then, the gig went well. And you know, it's like, that's a kind of a dream. Like to be honest, that was like a reach for me. I was like, in my mind, like, yeah, playing Newport would be amazing. But like, I didn't know for sure, like at any point in my career, that I would ever play the main stage at Newport. That's a big deal, you know? And so it was surreal, man. It was very surreal. There's like 10,000 people there, and you know, it was a fun night. And then it went well in Arturo. Afterwards, he came up to me. He's like, man, you sound great. He's like, make sure you keep in touch with me. And I was like, okay. So I did. And it's funny, man, because my best friend is a trumpet player named Eric Bloom, and he's in the band Lettuce and Soul Live. He's played with all sorts of people. I talked to him right after, and he was like, man, you got to do the same thing I did with Lettuce, because like 5 years before, he ended up subbing for Lettuce last minute. And then basically he just made sure that he was available. He'd look at the calendar, the tour schedule, and anytime they'd be in town, he'd make sure he was like free that weekend. So if he had a wedding or some other gig that paid good money, but like wasn't really like a big deal for his career, he'd make sure to take that time off and go and just be there. So I started doing that with Arturo. So when he'd like come to like Boston or like Connecticut or somewhere within like a few hour drive, I'd look at the schedule, I'd take the time off and then I'd text him and I'd be like, hey man, I saw you coming to, you know, Boston. I'm planning on coming. He'd be like, oh great, man, bring your horn, you know? So it started off like that happened for about a year and a half. And then he started a year or so, and then he started hiring me. Like he'd hire me for like shows every once in a while. And then I almost went to Korea with him, like right when I first met him. That didn't happen. And then but it was a year and a half after Newport, his manager called and said, hey, like, we want to offer you a position in the band. The keys player left and you're Arturo's first choice. So, you know, it was life changing, man. It's a big deal. Anyways, man, it's been a blast. I've been in the band now for, it's been 6 years, and we've toured the world, man. I mean, I've been to, I think, over 30 countries with Arturo alone, you know, in 6 years. It's been, you know, even with COVID, I mean, the first couple of years I was in the band, we were like super busy, because I joined in 2017. But then it got like, it, you know, COVID just, you know, there was nothing for like a little over a year, you know, and then we started back again, and now it's back up and running, man, out there.
So let's go to the Arturo video, if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Sure, yeah. Do you know, I'm forgetting the name of the city and the festival that we played at. What does it say there?
Stuttgart, is that what it is?
Stuttgart. Yeah. So that's a huge festival, man, and we did it the year before as well, the Stuttgart Jazz Festival. And they have like, it was kind of too bad, because I'm friends with Mike Mahar, Maz, the trumpet player from Snarky Puppy. Mm-hmm. They were there like 2 days before us, you know. So they had like a wide variety of stuff. They had Arturo, they had Snarky Puppy, they had Branford Marsalis. So the same day we performed, Branford was playing. And man, it was such a great show. Such a great show. Arturo sat in with Branford. Actually, I was like a few years back, man, we were playing in, we played in Seoul, Korea for the Seoul Jazz Festival. And same thing, it was Arturo and then Branford the next day. And I met Branford at breakfast, and he just like, we were hanging the next day, like, you know, just like backstage and stuff. And then he was like, hey man, he's like, do you want to come up and sit in for a tune? I was like, yeah. You know, so I got to sit in with Branford's quartet, man, which was incredible. But this time Arturo was there, so we asked Arturo to sit in, of course, you know, like Arturo wasn't there last time. But yeah, man, it was a great tour. It was a great tour. And that show was just top notch, man. Like the audience was amazing. This really cool guy, man. There's a guy that's sitting in with us that sometimes guests with the band. His name's Marius Preda. His main instrument is cymbalom. It's like a instrument, I believe, from Romania. It looks like a piano that's just opened up, and then you have these two mallets that you'll see on the video. He's just a virtuoso, man. He plays piano, he plays violin, he plays everything. And he's cool, man. So yeah, just a regular band with Marius Preda guesting.
All right, everyone. Well, we'll go to the video. Hope you all enjoy. We're back. Wonderful video. A lot of very fast jazz swing. Very that was a fantastic cool video. Love that. Love the jazz spirit and everything. So let's go to the teaching. So where did you start? How did you become a teacher, and how did you become
crazy
from here to being a Berklee professor?
Man, I started teaching when I was like 14. I think I started teaching when I was 14. So there were like a bunch of kids in my neighborhood that like were just starting, and like just parents would hear me practicing at home. And like when I was outside, one parent was like, oh, like, would you want to like teach my kid lessons? Like we live, you know, I live right up the street. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then like that kind of like spread. So like I started teaching, man, when I was like in high school. So like I had like five or six, I always had like five or six private students, like from the time I was like 14. So that was kind of cool for me, because like while I was like going through like this really like intuitive period where I was like learning things a lot by ear and, you know, just kind of learning on my own, I was also given like the opportunity to like also like try to like explain some of the things that I was learning, you know what I mean? From like a really young age as I was like kind of developing. So that was cool. That's how the teaching started. And then when I was around 20, I got offered a job, like a friend of mine, this really great sax player that lives around here, Mark Early. Anyways, he was on tour. He was on tour for like a really long time with this band, and he was trying to juggle like this teaching job at Ipswich High School. And he just decided that he like kind of couldn't tour and do the teaching job anymore. So he recommended me, man. And that was my first like really kind of official teaching job at a school. And then like three more like kind of came right at the same time. So I ended up teaching at like four different schools, like basically going in like at like, you know, 1 or 2 PM after school got out, and then teaching until like 6 or 7 or 8, depending on how many students I had. So yeah, I started teaching like pretty steadily, like when I was about 20, that was like the first teaching that I did. And then it just kind of went from there. You know, right after I graduated Berklee, this guy, Rob Rose, who was a really influential person at Berkeley. He was the, he basically ran like all the special concerts and special programs and stuff. He asked me if I wanted to teach at the 5-week program. So that was my first, like, kind of like very like, bit, like official, like teaching, you know, teaching at the high school was also official. So I started teaching at Berkeley. And then just one thing led to another. I ended up doing like a lot of clinics and things where like I'd go to like Japan. Like I used to work with this guy, Tiger Akoshi, amazing trumpet player, composer, teacher. Like he's just an amazing person. I was in his band for a while and he brought a group to Japan every year for like 10 years. And I did almost all of them. I couldn't make some of them, but I think I did 7 or 8 trips with him to Japan, and we'd go to Hokkaido. So it's like a region in the north of Japan, to the city of Sapporo, and we'd teach at this camp. It was like called Hokkaido Groove Camp, and it was amazing, man. Like I had like 30 saxophone students, and I worked with them all week, and we would, you know, talk about saxophone technique and improvisation. And then I also had like a band, and I had an improv class, and we'd basically like teach all day from like 7 in the morning until 7 p.m. for like 5 or 6 days in a row. And then we did a concert at the end. It was an amazing experience. And, you know, almost no one there spoke English. So I had like a translator. So that was interesting. It was like kind of like a first, you know. So everything that I said had to like kind of go through a translator and stuff. But, yeah, so that like I taught there, and then I guess the next big teaching thing I did, I lived in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil for almost 2 years, and I learned how to speak Portuguese while I was there. So then I started teaching in another language, so that was something. and then when I moved back to the States, I got a job at Boston Arts Academy. So I taught at Boston Arts Academy, which is right around the corner from Berkeley. And that was an amazing experience. It was kind of crazy because I didn't have an education degree. So I had to, and I wasn't certified to teach. So I had to like, literally I got hired in like July, and they're like, yeah, you have to pass like the, I can't remember what it's called. There's some sort of test you got to take, like to be certified to teach in Massachusetts. And it's like a test that like people study for like years for. They like take classes and study for it. And I had to pass it in like a month and a half. So I got like a tutor, and I just like shedded like really hard for like, you know, the whole time. And I passed it. So I taught there for 1 year. And that was a really great experience. Right as that year was over, a job came up at Berkeley in the harmony department. And I was like, I don't really think I can teach harmony, but everybody says to just apply for any job that comes up because that's how you get in. And I got an interview, and then I got the job, and I was like, what? Like, now what am I going to do? I don't know how to teach harmony. I don't know anything about this. I'm a saxophonist. So I had to leave my job at Boston Arts Academy. My boss, Greg, he was just an amazing guy, and he trained me for the entire year for that job. And then I like had to go up to him and be like 2 weeks before the school year started and say, man, I'm so sorry, I got hired at Berkeley. So I've been at Berkeley ever since, man. And then it's been great. I mean, at Berkeley, I teach all levels of harmony. I teach saxophone, woodwinds. I teach a education class. It's like a doubling class for saxophone and flute. I teach a bunch of different levels of ensembles depending on the semester. And then I teach 3 levels of this improvisation class, improvisation techniques 1, 2, and 3. So it's been awesome, man. And like, yeah, just the more I teach there, I'm just hoping to like be more like always be spread out. Like I like teaching a little bit of harmony, a little bit of saxophone, a little bit of ensemble. Like it's really nice that way. So yeah, it's been great, man. I mean, I've met some amazing students along the way, and yeah, it's been awesome.
It's awesome. So let's move over to your music. I think it's called the, hold up, it's called the Golden Age. If you want to
Oh
talk a little
yeah.
bit about your tune.
Sure, man. Sure. So that's a band that I've that's a project that I've been involved with for the last like I don't know, 6 or 7 years. It's a band called Unisphere that I'm in with this guy named Dave Zeno. We kind of conceived of the project. He also like has spent a lot of time in Brazil, and we met each other for the first time in Rio. We were at like a party on my friend's roof, like a it's overlooking like the bay in Rio de Janeiro. It's like the most like iconic, just beautiful. There's like, mountains coming out of the sea, and it's just unbelievable. So we met that night, and we just had this idea. We're like, man, let's do a project where we fuse like modern jazz with like Brazilian music, and like let's get Rafael Barata on it. Rafael is like just one of the greatest, me I in my opinion, the greatest Brazilian drummer, like period. He just moved to Boston, actually, through meeting me and Dave. Dave helped him like move to Boston, actually, like a year ago, but this is like 6 years ago. Rafael was still living in Brazil. He's like, Rafael's played with Milton Nascimento, Eliane Elias. Like, he's played with all the great musicians in Brazil. So we had this idea. Dave had a record label that he was working with, and we started writing music for this project. And we've done it's we recorded 3 albums so far. This the album that song is on our, I think, our most recent album. Yeah, that tune is it's called The Golden Age. It's like a sound that I kind of had in my head. It's like basically like there was, a lot of different golden ages of jazz, but one of the golden ages of jazz was like in the mid-90s. There was like this big revival when Verve started putting out like a ton of records, and Roy Hargrove came onto the scene, and Nicholas Payton, and all these guys. And yeah, this tune kind of it evokes like the spirit of like that period of jazz, I think. So I was kind of like, that's kind of what I had in my head. So the golden age, one of the golden ages of jazz.
All right, let's go to that video, The Golden Age by Mike Tucker and his band. We are back. Yeah, great tune. Once again, fast swing. I love the syncopation and then like da has that
thank you,
has that syncopation.
It's extremely syncopated.
Yeah. So what are some parting words you would like to leave our listeners with? Or
I guess thanks for listening to this interview and taking the time to check it out, and thanks to you and Lily for you know, having this nice platform so we can kind of talk about music and life and all those things.
Yeah, thank you so much, one and only Mike Tucker, saxophone player. Thank you for being part of this interview. For all the viewers out there, if you'd like to book a lesson with us, go to www.lilytheatercompany.org. I'll see you guys later.